This recording is copyright. IELTSblog.com Listening Practice Tests. Test 10. In the IELTS test, you hear some recordings and you have to answer questions on them. You have time to read the instructions and questions and check your work. All recordings are played only once. The test is in four sections. Now turn to Section 1. Section 1, you will hear a conversation between a man and a woman at an estate agency. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. You will see that there is an example. This time only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Hello, my name's Charlotte. I'm moving to this area in 2 months, and I was hoping that you would be able to help me with finding somewhere to live.
Good morning, Charlotte. I'm Matthew. Welcome to Anglian Estates. I'm sure we'll be able to help you. Were you looking to buy or rent a place to live?
Just somewhere to rent.
And in which postcode would you like to live?
My preferred one is AE5.
So AE5 is the correct answer. Now the full test will begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, as the recording is not played twice. Listen carefully to the conversation and answer questions 1 to 5.
Hello, my name's Charlotte. I'm moving to this area in 2 months, and I was hoping that you would be able to help me with finding somewhere to live.
Good morning, Charlotte. I'm Matthew. Welcome to Anglian Estates. I'm sure we'll be able to help you. Were you looking to buy or rent a place to live?
Just somewhere to rent.
And in which postcode would you like to live?
My preferred one is AE5.
What kind of place were you thinking of, Charlotte? A house, an apartment, a flat, a studio?
I'd eventually be looking for a house. But to start with, just a small apartment will be fine.
How large an apartment would you need?
It's for my daughter and I only, and we'll need a bedroom each. So we'll need two of them. I'd also want a separate bathroom and kitchen, and a living room, of course.
Okay, I'll just write that down.
Do you know of many apartments like I've described?
Yes, I think so. We have quite a number of apartments on our books right now. Most of them fit your description, as that's what people are looking for nowadays.
Oh, good.
Now, what's your rental budget?
$1,000 a week.
That's good. You should be able to find something nice for that. Is there anything else particular about the apartment you want?
First of all, I need the apartment near my daughter's school.
What's the name of the school?
It's called St. Mary's.
Oh yes, I know it. It's in Talbot Avenue.
That's right. I'd also like the apartment semi-furnished, please.
Including what, exactly?
The bedrooms and living room can be empty, but I'd like all the basics in the kitchen, like a cooker, fridge freezer, and washing machine.
Yes, I know what you mean. Don't worry. In our apartments, we always have all those basic things you need included in the rental.
Good. It would be nice to have a garden as well, although I know that's not so common with apartments.
Well, we have some ground floor apartments that have gardens accompanying the rental. We can look at some of those. The only issue there is that those apartments specify that you'll need to be accountable for the garden's maintenance. Would that be okay?
That's fine. I have green fingers.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
I'll just tell you a little about our terms and conditions. Before we show you any details, we'll ask you to sign a contract. This does not commit you to only working with us or anything, but it does specify that any apartments that you are shown by us, you have to rent through us.
That seems fair enough.
The contract also lays out our commission structure. This basically means that you have to pay 2 months' rent to us if you decide to rent an apartment shown to you by us.
That all seems in order.
Good.
Before the conversation continues, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen carefully and answer questions 6 to 10.
So let's see what we have that fits your requirements. To start with, there's a nice place in Grantham Gardens.
I'll just get my pen to make some notes. Here it is. Off you go.
So, this apartment is on the first floor. It's just been renovated and has the number of rooms you specified. It has no garden, unfortunately, but it does have a nice balcony that comes out of the living room and looks out over the nearby park.
That seems very nice. Is it close to Georgina's school?
Oh yes, I reckon it would be a 10-minute walk from St. Mary's.
That's a big advantage if she can walk to school herself. That would really free me up.
It also fits with your budget, although the deposit is quite high. Hopefully you'd get that back though.
I hope so. Do you have any others, Matthew?
Oh yes, I have a couple more right here and I should be able to show you some details of the others this afternoon. I can send the details by emails if we don't have time today.
Okay, I'll give you my email address at the end.
Now, the second apartment is in Lawrence Close. This is a ground floor flat, so you can walk out into the garden from the living room. The garden is around 150 square metres, so it's not enormous, but not too small either.
That sounds about right.
Good. Now, the number of rooms is fine, but a drawback is that it's not so close to St. Mary's. It would be too long for your daughter to walk.
I could drive her if the apartment was what we wanted.
She could also take the school bus, which leaves at the top of the road. It's not as convenient, but it's an advantage. Something else I like about this apartment is the wooden floors. They're very nicely laid and they look beautiful.
That sounds very nice. I'll have to see it. Is it within my budget?
It's a little bit over, but not by much.
That should be fine.
The last apartment I want to tell you about right now is in Green Road. This is again a nice apartment and is in line with your budget. It has the right number of rooms and it's walking distance from your daughter's school. It's on the third floor of a purpose-built building. But there is an elevator and each flat has an allocated section of the large garden.
I'm not sure about the third floor.
Another drawback is that the kitchen and living room are combined and you wanted them separated. I have to say though, it's done very nicely and the building is modern and immaculately looked after.
Is it worth looking at then?
Oh yes, I think you'll quite like it in spite of this first impression.
That is the end of section one. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 2. Section 2. You will hear a woman giving a talk on the radio about a new citizen's advice office. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen carefully to the talk and answer questions 11 to 15.
Good morning everyone and welcome back to Radio GTFM. You may have heard recently that the town is getting a new citizens advice office and Annette Arnold is here today to tell us a little about it. Welcome Annette.
Thank you for having me on the show. So yes, the town finally has a citizens advice office. The people who live in our town can come and get free, confidential and impartial guidance on all aspects of their lives. We can be found right in the centre of the town in the square, where you'll find the town hall, the old post office, the National Credit Bank, the main town police station, the tourist information office, the main town church, Boodle's department store and the art gallery. We're in the building that used to be the square's post office. And as you come out of the front of our building into the square, on our right is the tourist information office and on our left is the National Credit Bank. You can't miss our entrance. We have painted the whole of our front door bright yellow and the rest of the building's front is a rather loud shade of green. You can't miss all that. Directly opposite from our building is the town hall. People come to offices like ours for all sorts of advice. To give you an example, the world of work is where we can often help the people who visit us. This can cover all sorts of things. We can't actually help you find a job, but we can help with problems at work. This can range from grievances in pay to vacation entitlements and discrimination. Having a job is an essential part of most people's lives. And you can be faced with many difficult issues, so it is essential to know what you should do. Another common area is to do with money. If you find that you owe money to organizations or people, we can look at your options and provide guidance on how to deal with your problem. Not many things can cause more stress than this, and it's important to address it before things get out of hand. We can't lend you the money ourselves, but we have contacts in banking and government that can help. Another popular area is tax. Everyone finds this a complex area, and at some time everyone needs advice on it. We can show you how to work out whether you need to pay income tax and how it's collected. We can also tell you if you've paid too much tax. And there are guides to council tax and inheritance tax. We're not allowed to recommend any accountants to you, but you can research that on the internet if you feel you need someone after us to do any tax-related work.
You now have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen to the rest of the talk and answer questions 16 to 20.
So, we've had a number of emails asking where the different sections are within our building. Of course, there is a sign up at the entrance of the building to help you, and all the information is on our website. I didn't mention it earlier, but we have a big section on education. This office can help you with all your inquiries on your and your children's education. This is found on the first floor, in room 25, and the secretary there, Mrs. Atkins, will help you get started. Another office I didn't mention earlier is the one for relationships, which is also on the first floor in room 29. This place can give you advice on keeping your relationship together through therapy, and it can also advise you on your rights within the law if your relationship breaks down. We don't have a money office for you to pay any bills, as all our advice is for free. We do, however, welcome any donations you might want to give us. Although the government funds us to some extent, money's tight nowadays, and we're always short at the end of the year. If you'd like to offer us any funds, please speak to the receptionist on the ground floor, and she will direct you to whichever manager is on duty at that time. The money advice office is next to reception in room 1. But don't go there for donations, and don't go there for government benefits. The office for any inquiries relating to employment is in room 2 on the ground floor, opposite reception. They will help you with advice on all your rights and how to solve problems. One word of advice about this office is that they are often very busy, as their advice is very popular. Don't be too disappointed if someone can't see you right away. They may have to make an appointment for you to come back at another time, but you won't have to wait too long. Next to room 2 are the bathrooms. And the next one, room 4, is our section on benefits. This office will help you with all questions to do with your rights to money from the government. Also on the ground floor, you can find our offices on discrimination. This is found in room 9. Here, you can get advice if you think you've been treated differently because of who you are. Please note that this does not include employment in our offices. You need to go to the employment office for that. Room 18 on the first floor is the office for our consumer section. When you buy goods or services, the law gives you consumer rights. These protect you from being treated unfairly by a trader. You may have received poor service, or you may want to switch energy suppliers or cancel a contract. You can also learn more about what you can expect to find in a consumer contract.
That is the end of section 2. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 3. Section 3. You will hear two students giving a presentation to their teacher. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
Hello, everyone. So in today's seminar, we're going to be listening to a short presentation. That's you, Roger, and your partner, Josie.
That's right, Dr. Cork.
So, what are you going to talk about?
We had some problems choosing a topic, actually.
I thought you both wanted to examine the effects of the invention of the aerosol spray.
Well, that was our first idea, but the problem was that we found there was a group in the other class who wanted to do that too.
Also, today's application of the invention seemed too much linked to its influence on the painting industry, and we looked at that a few weeks ago.
I see. Yes, I think you were wise to steer clear of that. What other ideas did you have?
We were stuck for a good topic for some time. In the end, Roger had some reasonable ideas.
Thanks, Josie. So, one idea was that we could look into how the Industrial Revolution was affected by the invention of the spinning machine. This invention revolutionised the garment manufacturing industry and led to the loss of many jobs in factories.
That seems like a good project.
Yes, we thought so too, but it was hard finding the right sources.
I thought there would be plenty on that.
So did we, but the library had very little. We then had a look at a couple of other inventions, for example, Volta's invention of the chemical battery. Although this happened a long time ago, and we wanted to link it to the development of the mobile phone, and how its development depended largely on getting a battery small enough to make them portable.
That might be too big a time between the invention and its effect.
We came to that conclusion too, though it's a shame, as it was such an interesting topic.
What came next?
We looked at how the sextant was invented, which was interesting, as it was invented in the US and the UK simultaneously. By measuring angular distances between objects, people were able to work out their geographical position relative to celestial objects. This allowed ships at sea to be able to work out their positions reasonably accurately, and no doubt save thousands of lives.
Was there a problem with that topic?
We thought so. The effect of the invention was so long ago that we thought it was no longer very relevant.
I see what you mean. You'd probably have been all right, though.
We decided not to take a chance.
Well, it's often good to play safe.
I then wanted to look at the invention of modern light polarizers, which were created by the American physicist Edward Land.
What do they do?
They eliminate glare and were used in the first instant cameras.
And what was wrong with that?
That was my fault, I'm afraid. I just found the topic really boring.
I didn't want to force her, so we finally just chose a different subject.
You now have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen to the rest of the presentation and answer questions 26 to 30.
So, what did you finally decide on to talk about today?
We chose the invention of the ballpoint pen.
Off you go then.
I'm starting. So, like many inventions, the ballpoint pen came from a need, and this need for a different type of pen came about because of ink. Traditional fountain pens used an ink that dried too slowly. Quick drying ink was available as it was used in the printing business. This ink was soft and acidic as was needed, but it was not suitable for pens as it was too thick to pass through the nib of the traditional pen.
Am I right in saying that the ballpoint pen was invented by a Hungarian?
That's right. In the early 1930s, Laszlo Biro, a Hungarian journalist, thought about how printing ink could be used in a pen. Biro's idea was to fit a tiny metal ball bearing at the end of the pen. This was not a new idea. In 1888, the American John Loud patented a roller ball tip marking pen. Loud invented his pen, which had a reservoir of ink and a roller ball, in order to apply thick ink to leather hides. Loud's pen was never produced, and neither were 350 other patented designs for ballpoint pens over the next 30 years. The problem was the ink. If it was too thin, the pen leaked. If it was too thick, the pen clogged, and sometimes it did both.
So Biro's was the first ballpoint pen commercially successful?
That's right, but not in Hungary. Biro had to leave Hungary just before the start of World War II, and he created a new home for himself in Argentina. There, Biro set up a business producing his new pens, which were later also manufactured under license in the UK and the US.
Biro's original design is still the one that's used by most manufacturers of pens. In fact, the Biro company has problems with people using the word Biro. Because the Biro pen has been so successful, people often use it as a generic term rather than as a trade name.
So how did Biro's ballpoint pen work?
At the bottom, or point of the pen, is a small ball bearing, from which the name ballpoint comes. Above the ball bearing is a channel for the ink to flow down, known as the ink tube. In the middle of the ink tube is a central spring.
It already sounds complicated. Is this the process that is used in the cheap ballpoint pen nowadays?
It does sound complicated, but it isn't really. And yes, all modern ballpoint pens use this process.
Really? Anyway, please carry on.
The idea is that the pen is pressed down onto the paper when writing. This action forces the spring to rise, so that its top section lifts and allows a gap to open between the ink tube and the ink tank, which is found above the spring in the body of the pen. The ink can then flow down to the ball bearing, coating it as the ball bearing revolves during the writing process. In this way, quick-drying ink was able to be used in what was called the ballpoint pen.
That's very interesting. Now, let's hear your section on the effects of this invention.
That is the end of section 3. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 4. Section 4, you will hear a lecture on rice. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Hello everyone. Today in this agriculture lecture, we are going to take a look at one of the world's great staples, especially in Asia. It's also the third highest produced agricultural plant produced globally after sugarcane and maize. While rice has featured in the agriculture of South and East Asia since prehistoric times, recent archaeological research has offered new insights and raised new questions about when, how, and why rice first came to be cultivated. The highly productive rice crops of today are adapted plants, which differ in genetics from wild rice by possessing adaptations that make them productive in cultivation, but also dependent on cultivation for survival. It has long appeared that rice agriculture began in south-central China, somewhere along the Yangtze River, and spread from there southwards and to northeast towards Korea and Japan. However, archaeologists working in India have argued that their evidence suggests an origin of rice cultivation in the Ganges River Valley. For both regions, there are current controversies about how early rice was domesticated as opposed to being gathered wild. It seems that the origins of rice will remain in obscurity, and whatever claims have been made cannot really be substantiated. More relevant for us is looking at how good rice is grown in quantities to sustain human populations. In spite of its widespread use, rice requires special cultivation and care. The first is seed selection. This is important as different cultivation environments require different strains of rice in order to ensure that the highest possible yields are achieved. This does not usually need to be done by individual farmers. Nowadays, agricultural ministries have picked the optimum seeds for all the varying environments in their countries. The appropriate seeds are in turn made available to the appropriate areas. Next, as in other types of agriculture, the preparation of the land where the rice will be grown is important to create soil where the best possible root systems can be created and retained. If these are well established, the rice plant should develop to a good size and in turn produce a good return of rice. Once the land is ready, the plants can be introduced. The two main methods used for introducing rice plants to the soil are transplanting and direct seeding, and the choice between the two usually depends on the type of fields into which the rice will be put. Transplanting is the more popular plant establishment technique in much of Asia. It occurs when pre-germinated seedlings from a nursery are transferred from a seedbed to the wet field. Direct seeding is when dry seed or pre-germinated seeds and seedlings are sown by hand or planted by machine in the field. One of the key areas of rice agriculture is water management. Cultivated rice is extremely sensitive to water shortages, and when the soil water content drops below saturation, most rice varieties develop symptoms of water stress. Good water management practices are therefore needed to maximize rice yield. Nutrient management is another key area. Farmers must ensure that rice plants get the proper nutrients at the right time. Prolonged flooding of where the rice is grown ensures that farmers are able to conserve soil organic matter and also ensures that the rice receives free input of nitrogen from biological sources. Rice crops also require constant health administration, as the rice plant can come under threat from different sources in the field. A good understanding of pest management is required. When the rice plants are ready, they need to be harvested carefully. Depending on the variety, a rice crop usually reaches maturity at around 120 days after crop establishment. Good harvesting methods help maximize grain yield and minimize grain damage and deterioration. Mechanical harvesting using reapers or combine harvesters is the other option, but is not so common due to the poor availability and cost of machinery. Manual harvesting is popular across Asia and involves cutting the rice crop with simple hand tools like sickles and knives. Manual harvesting usually requires 40 to 80 man-hours per hectare, and it takes additional labour to manually collect and haul the harvested crop. After harvest, the rice grain undergoes a number of processes, depending on how it will be used. Drying is the process that reduces grain moisture content to a safe level for storage, and it is the most critical operation after harvesting a rice crop. Delays in this, or doing it badly, will reduce grain quality and result in post-harvest losses. The correct storage conditions will ensure minimal loss of rice due to changes in weather and moisture content, rodents, insects, and microorganisms. Finally, the milling of rice is a crucial post-production step. The basic objective of a rice milling system is to remove the husk and the bran layers and to produce an edible, white or brown rice kernel that is sufficiently milled and free of impurities.
That is the end of section 4. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of listening test 10. In the IELTS test, you would now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet.